Welcome to Jenny's Uncensored Pennies. I am Jennifer Marie Martinez.
I am Adam Herrera.
And today we are going to talk about housing.
Yeah.
Yay.
Okay, so first of all, I also want to recognize we are in the month of May, and apparently it is Mental Health Awareness Month.
Nice.
And so then, you know, the idea came that, like, well, let's talk about the housing crisis, because let's face it, if you're not housed, you probably, that would be very stressful and cause a decline in your mental health.
Absolutely.
Even if you are housed, or for us that are housed, we're fortunate.
Very.
But there's still the stress of, like, keeping your house. Right? And keeping a roof over your head and paying your bills and all of that.
Right.
So I work in social services, as I've mentioned before. And so I deal with a lot of individuals that are on the brink of losing their housing, or maybe they're not housed, living paycheck to paycheck and that sort of thing. I have to give news to people probably every day at work. It's not easy, and I've been doing it for over 12 years. So anyway, so I also wanted to give some information as far as when we talk about individuals that are unhoused. So those are, we're talking about homeless people, right? And all our language is changing now. And so we're trying to steer away from using the word homeless, although you will see it on, like, when you fill out paperwork and stuff, right? Just like the word Hispanic, like, where did that come from? Well, the government put it on a checklist, on a box,
yeah,
that you can check. And so you'll see, like, homeless or at risk for homelessness or whatnot. But so we're trying to use the terms unhoused or unsheltered as people experiencing homelessness. And so according to HUDExchange.info, there are four categories of homeless. So category one is literally homeless. So, you know, nighttime residence is public or not meant for human habitation. So that would be like when we see people, like, what, under bridges and on the side of the freeway and
tents.
Yeah, and tents, or even living in a shelter, in an institute, 90 days or less, and resided in an emergency shelter or place not meant for human habitation immediately before entering the institution. Category two is imminent risk of homelessness. So the residence will be lost within 14 days, or no subsequent residence has been identified and lacks the resources or support needed to obtain other permanent housing. Then there's category three. So homeless under federal stat. How do you say this word?
Stature? Statute?
Yeah, statutes.
Statutes? I don't know.
So.
Statutes.
Oh my God. Sorry,
just
people.
Just keep on reading.
So, oh man, sorry. Unaccompanied youth under 25 or families with children and youth. And then there's category four. So fleeing or attempting to flee domestic violence includes dating violence, sexual assault, stalking, and other dangerous or life-threatening conditions that relate to violence. So there's all these different categories of homelessness. So if you're, like, somebody's staying from place to place, you know, let me crash on your couch, or do you have an extra room, whatever, and you're having to move around, like, even those individuals are considered homeless. Nobody really thinks about any of that. I come into all of that because, right, there's all these different housing programs, and then you have to figure out, like, where under these different categories they fall under. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's pretty crazy because, like, if you don't have a place of your own, you know, that you feel secure in or whatever, like, what does the category matter? But, I mean, I guess it just comes down to funding.
Yeah. I mean, so do you have to like select, like if you're applying for housing or anything like that, mm-hmm. or like applying for these programs, do you have to like specifically check a box like out of those four categories?
No, I mean, you just check, like, because a lot of times it'll just say like
it's only homeless,
right?
Like, or like,
right, homeless. Sometimes they'll say like, you know, are you like facing eviction, you're mm-hmm. losing your home within 21 days or something like that. Mm-hmm. The different categories, that's like, again, for housing programs. So when there's funding available for like these quote unquote emergency housing vouchers, mm-hmm. and I say quote unquote because when you hear the word emergency, what do you think?
Like in dire need.
Right. Like, and like you're going to get help
yeah.
now.
Yeah. Like now. Yeah.
Quick.
Yeah.
Okay. So to put that into perspective, in our county, you know, we live in Southern California. But in the county that I live in specifically, the emergency housing vouchers, I don't know how it is everywhere else. And I didn't look that up. but just so that you know, anybody listening, and if, you know, if you come into contact with somebody, it's important to look into what exactly that means for that area. Mm-hmm. Because for this area, emergency housing vouchers, in order to be eligible to receive an emergency housing voucher, you have to be documented as someone that is homeless. Hmm. So that means, you know, going to a shelter, contacting somebody at the county or, you know, some agency that has a social worker that can document you as a person that is homeless, someone that is unhoused or whatever. And yeah. then they put you in these different categories. Okay. Sometimes that helps you, not
all the time.
Yeah, not all the time. Okay, so then you get documented, and then you have to be, again, you know, according to the paperwork, like homeless under one of these categories for like 18 months. Mm-hmm. And then a committee, like all the social workers, you know, there's all these meetings, whatever. And then they bring you up to like the board and they say, this person has been unhoused for this long and they need the voucher because, and they like say the reasons why, right? Like they have 7 kids. I've been there. I've heard that. Like, wow. 'Cause they have 7 kids and their grandma and the and like, you know, all this stuff. And I'm like, what in the world? And then, you know, they vote. People say, okay, let's get them the voucher. And then even after that, once like a person is eligible for the voucher, then it's like another 6 months before they actually get the voucher. And then once they get the voucher, then they have to find a landlord somewhere that will accept the voucher.
Yeah.
And that's a huge challenge.
Yeah.
Right. So emergency housing voucher. So now we're 18 months plus 6 months in. I have seen, however, you know, I was working with an individual and she had applied for housing back in 2012. Yeah. And in 2019, I called the housing authority because I was like, hey, like she's been on here for 7 years now. Her name's got to be coming up, right? And they're like, I'm sorry, we're working on 2009 applications.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Fortunately, she just got into her place in November. It took a lot of APS reports on my behalf. Mm. It took connecting her with a social worker. I am not a social worker. So it took connecting her with a social worker and a lot of advocating on my behalf to get her into her place. So then, So then she fit into this category of like, okay, well now she's homeless because she fled a domestic violence situation or whatever.
Wow.
And so unfortunately it took all of that to get her housed, but now she's very happy and she's very grateful, and you know, we don't really dwell on how she got there,
the journey. Yeah
She just,
that's wild though.
I know, it really is. It's so sad. And people say like, well, I shouldn't apply, like, because it's, and let's get real, it's like a 15-year for this specific housing authority. And in our county, there's, I don't know, like 3 or 4 housing authorities mm-hmm. for like the different cities, because, you know, there's cities within the
yeah.
county and stuff. So they all kind of vary, but I mean, minimum, I always tell everybody, like, depending where you apply, it's a minimum 5 to up to 15 year
that's wait. Wild. That's crazy.
Yeah. And some people are like, I could be dead by then. And I'm like, yeah, we could all be dead. Jeez. Yeah, it's bad. And so, I mean, I don't know, again, what it is like everywhere else, but it's very important. Oh, so then that got me into looking at, like, well, how much do you have to make to be eligible for this stuff? And that is mind-blowing, because I thought it was, like, a really low number, like, you know, 12,000, 20,000, whatever. And for some of them, yeah, it's, like, maybe 25. Some programs are, like, even 45,000, 50,000. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's, like, dang. I mean, it's...
For, like, a family or for... It doesn't matter who it is.
Oh, I'm just talking about, like, one person.
Oh, one person. Okay, wow.
Yeah, for wow. one person. So,
that's,
you know...
That's pretty mind-blowing. Like, I feel like that number keeps on... As more years pass, that number keeps on going up and up. And like 45,000, that's a lot. I mean, it's a decent living for one person.
Right.
Right. But imagine like, you know, for a family, that's
right.
It's not a lot. Definitely not.
Right. Like for two people.
For two people or like for two people and a child, like that's mm-hmm. that's struggling. But
for real.
But damn, dude.
I know. So, yeah, I mean, I always tell people get on the program list anyway, because you never know. Mm-hmm. I also have to let people know about, you know, you hear about quote unquote affordable housing. Mm-hmm. And there I am with the quotes again.
Quote unquote.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So affordable housing in our area is basically a $500 discount from what the median or so the average cost of rent, which is... Here in Southern California, rent is about, you ready?
$2,500.
$2,941. In this county specifically, it's $25,000 to $3,000.
Damn.
For rent. So affordable housing.
For one bedroom?
Yeah, for one bedroom. So when we're talking about affordable housing, you know, it would be $2,000 would be quote unquote affordable. Would
yeah.
be what it's starting at.
Well, I mean, I have affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess mine's considered median or...
Right, because it's like working...
Kind of, yeah.
Working like person.
The workforce
mm-hmm.
housing. And for one bedroom, I pay $1,750.
Which is amazing for Santa Barbara.
Which is, yeah, exactly, for Santa Barbara, right. But, I mean... Like, if it was just regular, like, yeah, I'd be up in that $2,500 to $2,800 range.
For sure.
Yeah, just for one bedroom.
Yeah.
It's wild.
And you can find places, like, you know, here there was a place for $1,750 or whatever, and I thought, dang, like, that's good. That's also good. Sad that I think that that's good.
Yeah. No, seriously. Yeah, I mean, it also depends on the area, like you're living in,
right?
I mean, Oxnard's no more cheaper. Like mm-hmm. I guess I don't know. Like I hate saying this word, but like the ghettoer it is, mm-hmm. the cheaper it is. But yeah, that's kind of like the reality we live in. It's just depends on the area you're trying to live in.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, here in California, the housing average. Or for an average home, so now we're talking about like an actual home,
mm-hmm.
is $744,000.
Holy crap.
In Southern California, so that's just California, that's the average for the whole state.
Uh-huh.
In Southern California, which is where we live, it's $826,000.
Wow.
Is the average home cost of living average in California, $53,000. So going back to like the $45,000,
yeah,
like that's not even average. That's below. And so $53,000 is low to very low income in most parts of California, and then six figures. So somebody making six figures, which we used to think like, dang, if, you know,
you're doing good.
Yeah, you're doing real good.
But struggling now.
Yeah, it's low income in some parts. That's considered low income. And we're talking about like San Francisco area.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like,
yeah. Affluent areas. Yeah.
And then, of course, I looked up like Texas because that's where a lot of Californians are going to. And that's where I'm originally from. So the housing average, the average home in Texas is $342,000. I know.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. But that's expensive. Like
for, yeah.
Because you used to get like a really nice house for like 100. Like we were looking at like 342. That was like a custom built home, you know?
Right. On an acre farm and everything. Right.
And then in Austin, it's $545,000 for a home. Shows the cost of living, the average cost of living in Texas is $45,000. And average rent, so get this, this even blew my mind, it shows $1,850 for the state.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's actually higher than I thought it would be, but...
But that's because everybody's going over there.
Yeah.
So you mess up the housing, the market. Yes. So $40,000 is low income in most parts of Texas. And then $60,000 is low income for some parts.
Wow.
Yeah. I know. So what do we do? How do you solve the housing crisis?
I feel like they've been trying to fix that issue by building more housing.
Right.
But even then, like, you know, here with the quotes again, affordable housing, right?
Right.
It's still not affordable for like people, like
the average person.
Yeah, the average person. You're still kind of like, oh, damn, like it's that much.
Yeah. Well,
and I mean, they're renting out the housing, so like you're not buying.
Right.
But I mean, for all that new development, like if you were to buy, it would still be in the 600 to 800 range, maybe. Here in California, yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like we're still trying to solve that issue, but it I feel like the issue is still getting worse. Like, or like the longer the housing development takes, the more and more, you know, the price range keeps on going up.
Yeah. I think it just keeps on going up. Yeah. Because like even there are corporations, right? Like different developers that's what they do. They build affordable housing.
Yep.
So whether it's through a housing authority or another sector, you know, here there's a couple of agencies, economic development corporations, if you will, that are part of, I guess they're part of special programs. They get special funding or whatever to be able to provide the affordable housing complexes and stuff, which again is just a discount. And then to be eligible for those, I think for Santa Barbara, if I'm remembering correctly, like for affordable housing, you can make up to, like for one person, again, up to like $75,000.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Like, you're telling me $75,000? Like,
that's a good living.
Yeah.
That's good. But yeah. Like,
but still, you can't afford freaking $3,000 a month in rent.
Nope. No, that's, you're cutting it. Yeah. Pretty damn tight. Yeah.
That's depressing.
Yeah. So my school district has actually just approved a new development for housing for its employees, for like,
oh, wow,
for like teachers and admin and stuff. But it's still not going to be enough, or like,
right,
it's still going to be expensive.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, it's going to be like full size families too. Like, and it's also going to be like a lottery. So like, I mean, yeah, it sounds nice. It sounds pretty. It sounds like shiny and cool and like new housing and stuff like that. And it still might take a while. Maybe, I think they said like maybe 5 years to develop.
To build it.
Whenever
they start accepting applications and then that whole process.
By that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you're talking maybe for one bedroom, two bedroom. 3 to 4 grand.
Right.
Still. And it's way out in Goleta. Like in the boonies.
You swear.
It's not, okay, so it's not far, but it's
20
it's,
minutes.
Santa Barbara Park.
I know, it's 20 minutes. And I'm like, bro, it takes 45 minutes from one of my sisters to get to the other sister's house in San Antonio. So jeez, what man, are you talking about?
City is insane.
I think it would take us like, because I would ride the bus to school.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to school out in the boonies. So from our subdivision, it took 20. Yeah, it was like a 20 minute bus ride.
Sheesh.
I mean, granted, how fast do buses go? I don't know. I think they went like 45 miles per hour or something.
Ish.
Yeah. But still, it was forever. But yeah, anytime that a housing waitlist, like if there's an income based, that's the kicker right there. Like, do you qualify for an income based program? Right? Because it can be, that's open to like people on Social Security benefits, right? Which here, I think they get like maybe $867 a month.
Wow.
Social Security benefits or something. So, you know, 30% of their income is what they pay for housing if they wait all that time and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But anytime that, a wait list opens up, I reach out to my friends and I'm like, hey, this is open. You need to apply or whatever. I mean, especially like my friends that are like single moms.
Yeah.
I let them know. And I had even gotten on the list myself because I'm like, shoot, you never know what's going to happen. I might as well be on the list.
Yeah.
And or even even like when somebody turns 18, apply for a freaking housing. Like, seriously.
It'll take like 5 years, maybe more.
Yeah, probably more like 10, 15. So who knows? You know what I mean? Like, you never know. And so, then,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so once you apply for a housing program, they periodically send out correspondence asking, like, do you still need the housing? Are you interested or what have you? So that's what happened with me. I had applied and then they were going to. So I applied to be on a wait list. Like, hey, I'm interested. Right. And then there was nothing. And then once there was something, then they sent me an invitation to apply for like an actual unit.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but in between that, they were sending correspondence saying, are you still interested? Is your contact information current? You know, whatever. And then as it turned out, like I ended up declining, my situation changed, so I don't need it anymore kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But a lot of times people apply and they don't keep up with the paperwork. And again, I mean, if you don't have a freaking mailbox that you can check or you don't have access to email or whatever, how can you keep up with that?
Jeez.
So then you get kicked off the list.
Yeah.
And there's like nothing that you can do, basically.
Or like when they call and you don't pick up, that's it. Like you have no... Like, they have no way of reaching you. That's
right.
You're back at the bottom of the list.
Right. So it's very important if you apply for a housing program to...
Yeah.
Any change, like, my number changed, reach out to that.
Update that.
Update everything.
Yeah. So I was on that list for housing, and because of the fact that I had a car, I was, like, at the bottom. Yeah. Like, automatically.
Yeah. Because it's an asset.
I don't blame them. I wasn't mad about it, but I was like, oh, wow. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. It's just like, oh, you're at the bottom. Sorry. Yeah. It's going to take longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and so, people ask me all the time, well, I have a disability. I'm a senior or whatever, all the above, right? Like, they're telling me all these just horrible situations. Like, don't I have priority? And unfortunately, at least here, I can only speak for the area that I know, right? Yeah, there is no priority. It doesn't matter if you're elder, it doesn't matter if you have kids, whatever, it's first come, first serve.
Yeah. And I mean, like, not to say, like, say bad about their situations, it's like everyone is in a situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's all similar, but you know, the state or the city doesn't see like your situation as special. It's like all the same to them. Like everyone has different circumstances, and
it's all a crisis.
Yeah, it's all a crisis.
There's no way to prioritize.
Exactly.
Because it's all a crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why it's first come, first serve.
Ugh, man.
I know. I know. And so imagine, yeah, like I just hear these stories and exactly what you said, right? Like it doesn't matter how things, doesn't matter to them. Like
it's all black and white.
Yeah, literally. And that's why it's first come, first serve. And I have to be the one, I'm the one that has to like deliver that news and explain, because
yeah,
I don't know if other people don't know or they don't want to be the bearer of bad news, or maybe both. I don't know. But yeah, so.
And it's like, have you ever had that experience though? Like when you call like one of those places and they're like, the person that you talk to is kind of cranky or like kind of like, you can tell like they're having a bad day or mm-hmm. they're just like really cold.
Right.
And they just have to shoot it to you straight. Do you ever kind of catch yourself, or like, do you ever get,
I am desensitized.
Like these, yeah, like.
Hello, well, have we met?
I mean, now you are, but like, do you ever catch yourself like, oh shit, like I was probably not that nicest person, or?
You know, I do my best to acknowledge that they are in a very hard situation
mm-hmm.
and all of that. So I do that with pretty much all the people that I talk to. Now, if somebody comes at me and is like, you know, that type of thing, I'm like, I understand your frustration. I know. Like, it does suck.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, like, this is what it is. And I'm just giving you the truth.
Yeah.
Like, this is what it is. And this is why it's important to vote and to get people to vote. I mean, and then, you know, and then there, that's a whole conversation, because people are like, I do vote and it doesn't make a difference. And it's like, well, that's why we need a lot of people to vote, and vote for the people that are saying they're going to do these types of things, right? Like make this type of change or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. And
it's kind of like me.
That's hard.
It's like me and my student loans.
Right.
It's like we keep on voting, we keep on vouch, or like, how do I say it? Like we keep on supporting like student loan, like relief and all this. Like we're just like when's it going to happen? Or like when, how,
yeah,
you know, when is this going to solve my problem? Or like shit like that.
Yeah.
Like it's stuff that we have no control over, but.
But apparently there's more people out there that are like, you know what? You took out that loan. It's your responsibility to pay it.
Exactly.
Boo-hoo. I'm going to vote this way.
Yep.
Because I'm not paying taxes to do that.
Yeah.
Because the money's got to come from somewhere.
Exactly. And
that's the same thing with the housing stuff.
With housing, yep. Money's going to come from somewhere.
Yeah. So where is it going to come from?
No money.
No money. Yeah, it's terrible.
God.
I know. But...
over it.
Everybody's like, I'm never gonna listen to this, they're depressing. But
housing's depressing.
It is depressing. And again, I mean, even when you do have a roof over your head, it's like, shit, didn't I just pay my mortgage? Didn't I just pay my rent? Whatever it is that you're paying. And then your utilities and, you know, everything that goes
and keeps on adding up.
Yeah. Quick.
Fast.
Yeah. And then you want to go party to forget about the expenses. And then you're like, damn, I just blew my money.
Well, no, you,
vicious, I mean, cycle.
Like this is why teachers are trying to get more pays, because they only get paid once a month.
Right.
So you take care of all your bills in the beginning of the month.
Mm-hmm.
So probably half your check, a quarter of your check,
right,
already gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have the rest of the month to kind of like stretch it out,
mm-hmm.
you know, like to stretch out your pay. And that's very stressful.
Yeah.
You have to definitely budget, and like, it's definitely like a different kind of lifestyle. And that's why, yeah, teachers are trying to get paid more because it's hard in these, right. It's hard in these damn streets.
It's hard in these damn streets. Right. So, yeah, if you're not making probably over...
Okay.
Over 150 probably, or 200, you're going to be stressing over all of that.
Yeah. You're sweating.
Mm-hmm. I'm working every day.
Or you're probably a DJ.
You're sweaty DJ. Oh, my God.
Trying to make ends meet.
I know. Everybody has, like...
A side gig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A side gig. If not side a second hustle. Job.
Second job, for sure.
A full-on second job. Yeah, but we wanted to talk about this just to bring awareness. Like, hey, if you're one of those fortunate people that doesn't have to worry about that, like, more power to you. That's amazing. And yeah. I love that for you.
Absolutely.
If you know people that are struggling, like, you know, like, let them know to look into programs.
And there are a lot of programs out there. Definitely.
Yeah, and it is discouraging, right, to hear the wait times or whatever, but still, yeah. Like...
There's always a shot.
Yeah, get on the list regardless. Get on the list
as soon as possible. Yeah, just...
Become informed.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of programs, though, like, that do offer assistance, like...
They're what?
I don't know, like food and...
Like, oh, yeah, like food banks and...
There's, like, cheap internet. There's programs with like AT&T and Cox, and there's ways to, you know, cut down your
expenses.
For
and sure. That's, yeah. And so that's something that we work
with.
Yeah, yeah. We help people do is like, okay, well, I know you like having your iPhone, whatever. How do we reduce the monthly bill on there to free up that money to go towards housing?
Yeah.
Right. Or like, what are some expenses we can cut out so that you have more money to go towards your actual housing?
There's like always, there's all kinds of programs with like Edison, like electric bill, water bill,
mm-hmm.
like your trash and all that. And there's always some kind of program that you can qualify for.
Yeah. And so I guess that's a good segue. If you don't know where to start. With that, a good place to start, I would say, would be to connect with an independent living center because they're nationwide. So ILCs, independent living centers, are nationwide. They do work specifically with people that have disabilities, but they don't ask for any proof. So, I mean, hey, you're stressing about money, stress, right? Like when they ask you, like, oh, what's your... disability, you can just say, you know, I have mental health, because they're not going to ask for any proof. And let's face it, like, stress can be debilitating. Mm-hmm. Anxiety can be debilitating. So, yeah, they serve anyone that self-identifies as a person with a disability. They actually were first founded in Berkeley, California. The first ILC came about back in 1972 by Ed Roberts. He had the iron lung or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so they were created to offer peer support and role modeling. And the agencies are run and controlled by and for people with disabilities. And there's 403 centers nationwide.
Wow.
Or is that maybe not nationwide? Is that in California? I forgot what I wrote down. Sorry. It might be nationwide.
It might be nationwide.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
They are everywhere. Like. And then there's some that, like, they don't. So there's, like, the Centers for Independent Living, because there's a whole website. It's, the acronym is NICL, but it's NCIL.org, where you can go to find your local independent living center. So there's a lot of centers that aren't, like, official members of NICL. And so they might have different names, but basically it's like the same core services. So yeah, so the staff members of the IL are pretty knowledgeable in resources that are available. And yeah, especially again with housing. So we have to keep up with all the things that could help the demographic. So what is disability? According to the CDC.org, a disability is any condition of the body or mind that makes it more difficult for the person with the condition to do certain activities and interact with the world around them. So, you know, if they have participation restrictions or physical limitations, could be... What's going on over there?
Sorry.
So, yeah, sorry. I'm kind of jumping all over the place, but because I brought up, you know, if you contact an independent living, whenever you, so it's important, ncil.org, so nicol.org, to find an actual independent living center in your area. Because if you just Google independent living center, you're going to come up, there's like so many weird things out there.
Yeah.
Basically like a retirement home or something. So a lot of times when people see like that name, if the agency has independent living in their name, people think that they are residential, but they're not. It's literally a place to like get information and then get connected with resources or help with applying for the different resources that are available.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the advocacy part for, you know, somebody to advocate for you to either, like if a person has an eviction notice or something, you know, then they can reach out to the IL and the staff can help hopefully prevent that. Like sometimes even, I mean, I've seen situations where somebody's getting evicted, but then like it was because they needed help, like they needed services in place and they weren't getting those services. So then they were doing things that, you know, was making them at risk to losing their housing. Sure. But yeah, then a lot of times it's just like miscommunication or whatever. But with a staff that can like talk with you, see what's going on, what can help you to hopefully stay in your housing, then, you know, a lot of times that can be resolved. Like I one time had somebody come because they were going to be evicted because they yanked the smoke detector out of the unit because it was going out. You know, it makes that awful noise. Oh, yeah.
Like it makes
it so loud. Yeah. And they wanted to make it stop, so they yanked it out of the ceiling. And then the people got mad and were like, no, like that's dangerous. Like, okay, well,
nothing was done about it.
We get a new one and they leave alone. Can they stay? And they're like, well, yeah. Okay, well, let's do that. Like, what do you mean?
That's crazy.
But people, you know, I don't know, they just freak out and and sometimes they don't know what to do. So maybe they get combative or whatever, because hello, if you're being told that you're going to lose your housing, then
yeah,
you might have a counterproductive reaction.
It's, well, especially if you live with, if you're a renter.
Right.
Or like if you live in housing, like it's always good to speak up about any type of concern.
Right.
Or any type of like accommodation.
Right.
Like for me, example, like I was slipping down my stairs like when it rained.
Yeah.
And that shit hurt so bad.
Well, yeah.
I would slip, like I slipped like three times. And I'm able bodied. Like you know, I have coordination, but still, like these stairs were so slippery.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like, you know, kind of slid forward and, you know, I'd hit my lower back, hit my shoulder. It was so bad. I know you're laughing, but it was so bad. But then I said something, but like, luckily, you know, they took it very seriously.
Right.
Because that's something that they can get in trouble for. Right. So then, you know, they fixed the problem with putting grip tape. I mean, they probably should have put it on all the stairs, but I mean, they put it on the last half of the stairs, which is okay. But I mean, but still, like, it's always good to say something or speak up or like speak your concern.
Right. Because it's not, I mean, it's not like you're complaining, but you're like, hey, this happened and mm-hmm. it's dangerous. Like, I'm okay, but
still.
Yeah. And what did they tell you? That other people had fallen too and nobody said anything or something?
My neighbors.
They fell.
They fell like a couple times. I heard like a big old
boo
thump. I was like, dude, are you okay? It's like, yeah, I just slid down the stairs. And I was like, yeah, like I put in like a work order to have it fixed, and they fixed it right away. So, but that was, you know, just.
Yeah. And then that's another thing too, you know, like a lot of people say, well, I don't want an affordable housing complex, or I don't want this program to build in my backyard. Mm-hmm. Because there are people that were unsheltered, or, you know, or they're poor, right? Like, I'm talking like if I'm one of those people, right? Like, oh, I don't want those people living there. They're poor, they're dirty, they're this, they're that, you know? Like, mm-hmm. there's this whole stigma of
people that live in housing.
Right.
Yeah.
And the reality is, like, no, they're just people are just people.
Yeah.
And there, okay, so there are people that are, like, also labeled as chronically homeless.
Right.
Where they've been homeless for a very long time, and they prefer to live in the streets.
Yeah.
Because that's what they know. That's what they're used to. They have their buddies out there. And when they get housed, they're by themselves.
Yeah.
And it's, like, weird for them, and it's uncomfortable for them because they've been out in the streets for so long.
Actually, yeah, I went to high school with two guys. And, you know, when I went to private school, and like their families were able to afford the education, but like these guys preferred to live on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was their choice to be homeless.
Yeah.
And I mean, I didn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of hard to believe. And seen them out there, and unfortunately they passed on, but like it's just kind of like mind-blowing. But
yeah, I mean, and there's people that work and have a car, and they choose to live in their car because mm-hmm. they're like, you know what, I pay for my car, it gets me, I get to work, I have a membership at the gym, so I can shower and whatever. Yeah. And I sleep in my car.
Yeah, that's right.
And I have money to travel and stuff because I live in my car.
A lot of people do that. They have a gym membership, and they use it for the shower.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they take like hour showers, but
so do I.
It's warm.
I'm also do I.
It's warm. They got towels. They get to clean up, and then they're off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, you find a way to make with what you have,
make it happen.
Well,
but even then, like, we had a program.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was like an affordable gym membership for that reason. So like there's a lot of resources out there. I feel like more so now than, you know, ever.
Right. Yeah. And so again, maybe I'm biased because I know, but I didn't know that these places existed.
Mm.
But to connect with somebody, you know, because the internet, yes, it's very helpful and stuff, but then you can get a lot of like misinformation,
yeah,
as well. So I would rather speak with somebody that actually helps people apply for stuff and is knowledgeable in that. So that's why I brought up the independent living centers.
Definitely.
So yeah, I think that's a really good resource. Even applying for Social Security, or even state disability. So, mm-hmm. you know, let's say you get sick and you have to stop working. We, you know, apply for state disability like immediately when you stop working. And then state disability, it's kind of like unemployment. It's the same, comes from the same pool of money, if you will. So state disability pays for, it's a year, but it's based on like the income that you made like the year prior,
because,
you know, it comes out of your paycheck, right? So you're paying into this program.
Right.
And then if you're still unable to work, it looks like you're not going to be able to go to work after that year, then, you know, you should apply for either Social Security insurance, so it's SSI, or Social Security disability insurance. So for SSDI, you know, you have to have worked like so many credits. I don't know the amount of credits, but basically you might be too young to qualify for SSDI. Most people apply for both SSI and SSDI, and then, you know, usually get denied for one But that's also something. So all that to say that at the independent living centers, you usually have someone that specializes in helping people apply for those benefits. Or if an individual has applied and been denied, they can help with the appeals process for that. And a lot of people don't know, you know, that you can apply for that, for anything like that, or that, or, I mean, you, when you get a denial, they will say, like, you can appeal this, but a lot of people are like, well, no.
They don't want to, like, go through with it.
Yeah, they think that that's it. That's the end of the road or whatever. But no, you definitely should at least try.
I do feel like a lot of, piggybacking off of that, like, a lot of people do get discouraged.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, maybe intimidated, or like there's some sort of fear of like applying for these programs, going through these programs, going through what they have to go through,
mm-hmm.
like the amount of time it takes.
Mm-hmm.
And like I would definitely be, you know, like discouraged or kind of, I don't know. It's just another person applying for these programs, right? And for like a lot of those programs, I have wait lists and like the availability, and if you qualify, there's like so many circumstances.
Do you talk about any program?
Any program, yeah. Like literally any program.
Everything's a process.
Everything's a process, especially if state funded, federally funded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like there's so many other people in that line.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And I feel like, yeah, people just don't want to go through with it, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, what's your experience with that? Or, like the types of questions or, like, the types of worries that people have
in regards
to things?
Yeah, so a lot of times, and I'm thinking of, like, Social Security benefits, people don't know. Or, yeah, they are discouraged. Like, they don't think they're going to be eligible. Then, or they're just not prepared, like they don't have a lot of the information that they need, which to apply for, like if you're saying, I have this disability, I can't work, you need to provide who, what, when, where, how type of information in regards to your disability.
Yeah.
So who's treating you for that disability? How are they treating you? Where are they treating you? What are the places that you've been to? So you don't need to really remember like exact dates and times. Like, oh, I had an appointment on such and such a date at this time at this clinic or whatever. You just need to know, yes, I went to this hospital. I went to that clinic. I had these x-rays done or whatever. And it was about, I don't know, like January or whatever.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times when people don't know, I'm like, well, do you remember if it was cold outside? And you know, and ask them questions like that, and then they're like, oh yeah, actually. So yeah, I you know, I think it is important. I know when I get paperwork, I'm like, what, I don't want to do this.
Yeah,
because all the questions and the blank lines are, it's overwhelming, you know. But I don't have a problem doing it with somebody else. Right. Doing somebody else's paperwork. I'm like, okay, what's your name? What's your date of birth? And how about this? And how about that? And I don't have a problem.
And for me, I'm like, wait, do I have asthma? Wait, do I have any illness or pain or anything? Or
I never thought about that. Maybe I do have it.
Yeah.
Now that I'm reading that. Yes, I do. No.
Seriously, like, anyways, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I'm always straightforward with people because I, you know, some people, yeah, it could take like 18 months to get their disability to kick in. But it just, you know, depends on how much information you give up front, how much digging they have to do.
Yeah.
And if you don't provide all the information, then they can't get the, you know what I mean? Like,
I think that's what I was trying to say is the digging.
Right.
That people would tend to get discouraged on.
Right. But literally, like, Social Security does all that for you. And that's why it takes a while.
Good to know.
Because they're going to call, you know, Dr. Smith or whatever.
Whomever.
Yeah, they're going to reach out to all those people and they're going to request all the documentation showing, you know, your medical history or whatnot. And then from there, they make a decision.
Wow. Okay.
And then when, you know, if you apply and you get benefits, it's always important to let them know if you start working, hey, I started working, and you give them your pay stubs. Like, I think it's monthly. You have to turn them in. I don't know if it's monthly or weekly. I don't know if it depends, but I was like, here, I made this money. And the reason why I say that is because...
I think it's like every time you get paid now, right? Because...
Right. So it could be weekly or biweekly or whatever.
Depending on the job, yeah.
Yeah. So you have to report that you made this income so that they can adjust. Gotcha. And a lot of times I've seen it happen. Either people are like, I didn't know, I didn't turn it in, or nobody told me. But it says when you apply, if you have a change in income, if you start getting any other income, you need to report it. Why? Well, it's a federal freaking agency. They're going to find out. Your Social Security is on there. They're going to find out. Damn. And then guess what? They're going to come back and they're going to say, yeah, so we actually looked at your stuff and...
Where's my money?
Yeah, because we paid you and you were making money from over there. So give us this other money back. I literally have seen overpayments for like $40,000.
Oh my goodness.
I have also seen where there is an overpayment for like an obscene amount of money. And the person did do everything that they did everything right.
Supposed to do it.
Yeah. And Social Security messed up. And they were like, oops, my bad. Yeah.
Can I have my 40 grand back?
Yeah. Or I've even seen, this one was bad. So a person, when a person goes into like a long-term hospital, right? So horrible accident, whatever, you go to a hospital and then you go to like, one where you can stay for months or whatever, right? So a lot of times people will get a social worker at the hospital and then they'll apply for benefits so you can get income. Or so you can like pay, you know, through like a government program for the treatment and stuff, right? So this person had a horrible accident, was in one of those, and so was only getting like not even $100, whatever it was a month from like Social Security. Right, which makes sense if you're in the facility.
Yeah.
But then they went home and they had been home for like 10 years and nobody told them, let Social Security know that you're no, that you're not at this place. So they were still receiving only that same amount. Right. So then they call my agency or where I work, right? And I'm asking about income and I'm like, wait a minute, this doesn't look right. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, no, because you should be getting this amount. And then sure as shit, Social Security was like, oh, I didn't know. So we had to like turn in like the, what is it called when they release you from the hospital?
Yeah. Yeah.
The discharge papers.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, 11 years ago or whatever it was. And then they're like, oh, we can back pay, but only up to... think like 5 years or something.
What? Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. It was crazy. The good thing is that they adjusted the income.
Oh, good.
Good news, bad news. The individual like can't live on their own, so they're living with family.
Oh.
But now they're able to help, right, financially in the household. So that's good. And they did get some back pay, but the family was just like, we would have never have known.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Like nobody ever told us. And here's the thing. When you get benefits, you have to, whether it's housing, whether it's Social Security, whatever, there's recertification paperwork, probably like annually or biannually, whatever it is. And you have to say, yes, like my stuff is still the same. I still need to be on this program or what have you. And so they were doing this whole time. And I don't understand how somebody, like nobody... thought to check the address of like what they had on file.
Gee.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's wild.
But we did prove, myself and the benefits advocate, we did like help prove that no, that was your fault. Like they have this worker assigned to them and that like they dropped the ball. You need to fix it.
Damn.
So
that's cool story.
Yeah, that was a good one on my
that was a really good one.
Jeez. I was really happy to be part of that one.
Oh, man.
And then
it's a victory.
Yeah, literally. And then, you know, this was like the individual was a younger individual and bilingual, but first generation American, and the parents were Spanish speakers. So yeah. I think that's where
the barrier.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. The language barrier. And then we talk about, like, you know, people don't want to bring attention to themselves or whatever, even though they're completely legit.
Yeah.
So anyway. Yeah, I don't know. Lots of information.
There's a lot. Well, housing is like a very general term, and there's so many ways you can go with it. And it's like it's always an ongoing issue or like an ongoing conversation.
Right.
So if y'all have any input, any stories, or any hands-on experience in regards to housing, please let us know.
Yeah, if you know somebody that needs to be connected with an independent living center, please reach out to me. I will be happy to, you know, dig in and find out what the local...
Get you in contact with the right people.
Yeah, with the right people, and even, you know, make that phone call with you if you need that. You can reach out to me at... You can send me a text at 805-312-9116 if you're wanting more of like the hands-on type of help that I will be happy to provide. You can always reach out to me on Instagram at Jenny's_pennies.
And I'm at DJ Adam Herrera. You can always reach out to me. Say hi if you want.
Yeah, any suggestions or what have you. You can also book a 30-minute Zoom with me on my website. It's Genuine with a J. So Jennuine lifecoaching.com. And yeah, I have a little calendar on there. You select a date and time and we can meet that way. But yeah, for sure. Reach out, text, Instagram, or Zoom, whatever.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, no commitment, no nothing, just 30 minutes with Jennifer.
Yeah, I'm not going to charge you.
Talk about whatever you want, any kind of direction you need, or any like unanswered questions, or even if you just want to talk, like,
yeah,
just reach out to Jen. Like, she's awesome. Trust me, you're in good hands.
Thanks. And please always remember, your voice matters. You are capable. You are lovable. You are deserving. You are enough.
Have a good one, y'all. Peace.